Thank you, guys. Thank you, Johnny. Thanks, Ed. Thank you, Bart. Appreciate it. Hey, Jim. Hey, Tommy. Hey, George. Jim Shea. How are you, man? Ronnie. How are you doing? Thank you. Hey, John. Okay, Dan, get ready to go to work. Hey, Jeff. Thank you. Jim. Hey, Jim. Good to see you. Hey, Dan. Roger. Good to see you. Good man.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President,
okay.
Governor, on behalf of the joint session, we welcome you to the House chambers and we look forward to hearing your address and look forward to working with you this session. The House and Senate have both agreed that this will be a very short session.
So, that sounds promising already.
The podium is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. We don't need this. Oh, okay. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Honorable Justice, my fellow constitutional officers, distinguished legislators, special guests that we've invited for today in my cabinet, as well as my friends and my family, and especially my First Lady and yours. My fellow Idahoans, I'm here today to report on my view of our state and to provide you with recommendations for this coming year. It is my pleasure to report that Idaho, having been tested by this great recession, now is emerging leaner, stronger, more resilient, and better prepared to compete, to prosper, and prevail in the years to come. Thank you. Thank you for your leadership, and thank you for your partnership in guiding Idaho through a trying time. For the people that we serve, and thank you for your civic virtue in staying true to our Idaho values. I'm also proud and humbled to report to you today the successful and the honorable homecoming of the men and women of the National Guard's 116th Cavalry Brigade Combat Team. We also recently welcomed home about 100 Idahoans who were deployed to Iraq with the Army's 391st Engineer Company. But it is also my solemn duty to report that two of our courageous warfighters from the 116th Armored Cav lost their lives defending freedom during 2011 in a country half a world away. I ask that you remember and keep Specialist Nathan Ryan Byers and Specialist Nicholas Wayne Newby and their loved ones in your prayers and thoughts as we begin our work. Along with Staff Sergeant Jason Zeppa, who was wounded and received the Purple Heart, they were among the more than 1,500 Idaho members of the 116th who put their lives on the line for us, and they weren't alone. Specialist Robert Dias, of the 1st Infantry Division, Corporal Devin Daniels of the 82nd Airborne, and Corporal Ryan Sharp of the 1st Infantry Division, each gave the last full measure of devotion in the defense of liberty during 2011. They were our sons, our fathers, our brothers, our teachers, our students, and our friends. They will be sorely missed. Now that most of our valiant soldiers are home and once again helping make Idaho the best place in the world to live and to raise a family. Unfortunately, that's not true of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl of Haley. He remains in the captivity of the Taliban-supported terrorist network in Afghanistan. I know you'll join me in continuing to pray for his safe return to home. Among those troops who have returned home, grateful for their freedom, far too many did so without a job. That will change, because it must change. I believe we can all agree that these men and women have faced too much hardship fighting abroad for us to ask them to face more hardship back here at home. And so I'm pleased to report to you today that the Department of Labor, the Division of Veterans Services, the Military Division, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Education, and all state agencies are joined in the task of addressing that challenge. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hire One Vet Act is more than the right thing to do. It is our responsibility to ensure that our troops have the tools that they need to resume their productive lives as civilians. So I encourage you and all Idahoans to help however you can, to make good on the shared commitment to those who safeguard our country's future. Their plight is our plight. Their success will be our success. I cannot put it any plainer than that. Those veterans and our children are at the heart of the Idaho that I want to see by the end of my second term. I want to see an Idaho that is more independent and dynamic, diverse, built on a foundation of freedom and personal responsibility and public accountability. I want to see an Idaho focused not on scarcity or what we lack, but more on prosperous and hopeful future for us all. It is with that Idaho in mind that I set my two budget top priorities for the 2012 legislative session. And the reality is that those two priorities are inseparable: jobs and education. Almost everything we do this year will impact on those two priorities, which I'm confident that you share. But let's talk first about the philosophy that underpins those priorities, the philosophy that has seen us through one of the worst economic downturns in American history. Now, about 14 months ago, you and I were elected by the people of Idaho, with the understanding that we would make economic growth and the creation of more career opportunities the centerpiece of our state government's agenda. They entrusted us to deliver to bring to them a more efficient and effective smaller state government and to protect Idaho's hardworking taxpayers. Our citizens expressed strong support for our emphasis on government doing more with less, as they have had to do, and our steadfast focus on living within the people's means. They embraced our ideas, encouraged our efforts, and recommitted along with each of us to putting the politics of the past in the past. And they endorsed our opposition to federal programs and policies aimed at imposing greater burdens on the taxpayers, locking up our natural resources with regulatory roadblocks, imposing top-down mandates, and creating one-size-fits-all government solutions to our challenges. Thanks to your leadership and an understanding of our constituents' needs that I believe only a citizen legislator can possess, the result is we have a state government that does not face and will not face the staggering deficits, layoffs, shutdowns, tax increases, and other problems that are facing other states. But keeping our heads above water in difficult times isn't good enough, not for us and not for the people of Idaho. We're not here to just get by. We're here to help enable people, the people that we serve, get ahead. My three broad priorities when first elected as governor. We're to encourage economic opportunity, ensure responsible government, and empower Idaho's citizens to be the architect of their own destiny. Those remain the foundation of my approach to this job. But circumstances have converged to raise the stakes. You will continue to see my administration focus on reestablishing the proper role of state government in our lives. And you will see, and you will continue to see, our extraordinary Idaho independence and self-reliance assert itself in response to federal intrusions on our sovereignty and on our liberty. But you will also see a greater emphasis on ensuring the efficiency and the prudent frugality that we've established in every state agency of government during the past 3 years. That will become standard procedure. What we had to do will become our new normal going forward. And you will see a greater emphasis on building innovative public and private partnerships that leverage our limited resources toward advancing and achieving our shared goals. And that's especially true when it comes to fulfilling the benchmarks of Project 60 and putting more of our 65,000 unemployed Idahoans back to work and preparing our citizens to fill more of the 18,500 jobs that remain vacant in Idaho. Now, that's not just jawboning or wishful thinking. We're taking concrete steps to address the fact that employment growth, a lagging economic indicator, has been lagging far too long. Unemployment is slowly starting to decline. We've seen some good news in recent months with our jobless percentage at its lowest rate in 2 years. But unemployment remains at an unacceptable level. And while what government can do is limited, as it should be, we can and will do a better job of reaching out to our businesses and our employers as partners in this effort. And that starts at the top. And now, Project 60, at the top, has a new ramrod. Jeff Sayre has taken over as the Department of Commerce director. He brings with him a wealth of private sector entrepreneurial experience, as well as renewed energy, enthusiasm, and commitment to actively engaging with the people who make our economy and our communities work. And it's already making a difference. Jeff is joined by Roger Madsen at the Department of Labor, Bill Deal at the Department of Insurance, Ryan Ness at the Department of Transportation, Celia Gould at the Department of Agriculture, Gavin Gee at the Department of Finance, our colleges and our universities, and others to provide employers, job seekers, and businesses looking to grow with the tools that they need to succeed. Jeff and Roger in particular also are already working closely with the local economic development professionals and community leaders all over Idaho. Their job is ensuring that we are fully prepared to take advantage of economic opportunities and create even more with a well-trained and motivated workforce, targeted investments, and minimal government red tape. Okay, now. They understand the role of government. Effective government is not to create dependency, but rather to facilitate opportunity. Is that the right path forward? I don't know. Ask the hundreds of people who will be working for the new Chobani Greek yogurt plant built in Twin Falls. In fact, ask anyone benefiting from the incredible economic growth and increasing business diversity being made possible by the success of our Idaho dairy industry. Ask the hundreds of Idaho citizens who are drawing paychecks and paying taxes as a result of the growth of ON Semiconductor in Pocatello or the new All-State Regional Customer Service Center in Chubbuck. Ask any of the employees or the supporting businesses benefiting from the growth of Ground Force Manufacturing in Post Falls or its new Underground Force expansion. Ask Sensi or any of the health science research and technology businesses choosing to expand into the core in Meridian. Other great Idaho companies like MetaGeek in Boise, Dynamis in Eagle, and PNW Arms in Potlatch also have the potential to substantially change the economic landscape of this state. Those examples and many more are tangible results of Idaho's entrepreneurs stepping up and expressing confidence in our future. And the key to their willingness to stake their future on Idaho is the degree to which we make a commitment to being partners for that progress. Partnership is a key to the new programs you'll be hearing more about in the weeks and months to come. It's called simply IGEM, which stands for Idaho Global Entrepreneurial Mission. It's patterned on successful programs that we've seen in Utah and Virginia. A similar concept is now being applied in Colorado. Industry increasingly is wrapping its arms and embracing around the idea. We're not reinventing the wheel here. In fact, our agricultural industry has had similar programs in place for years. We're just perfecting it for our universities and our communities and more of our Idaho businesses. IGEM involves industry entrepreneurs, higher education, the Idaho National Laboratory, and the Center for Advanced Energy Studies. Together, their focus will be on creating new value on our campuses that will, number one, help existing businesses grow, as well as nurturing the startup of new businesses, and create more jobs and opportunity for Idaho. That will require a genuine commitment from some targeted investments, and perhaps most importantly, a significant cultural change as our universities have approached research and working with industry. I appreciate our university presidents. And also the State Board of Education for partnering with us in that process. I urge you to act decisively in support of the legislative efforts that IGEM will require. That includes collaborative research aimed at job creation. Public schools throughout Idaho are also undergoing a cultural and technological changes as we continue implementing the Students Come First reforms that you all passed and approved last year. I'm committed, along with Superintendent Luna, to ensuring the success of those reforms. And that's why my budget calls for fully funding Students Come First, including its technology and pay-for-performance elements. The modest but targeted and responsible general fund increase I'm proposing for public schools is the right path forward. It will help our limited taxpayer resources go further and make our K-12 education system more effective and customer-driven. Most importantly, fully funding Students Come First will help ensure the success of our Idaho students in an increasingly complex, competitive global market. Preparing Idaho students for a wider world and for reaching their greatest potential right here at home is a constitutional responsibility for state government. And like supporting our veterans, it happens to be the right thing to do for our families, for our communities, and for our future. Because when it comes to education, we cannot rely on the policies of the past to prepare our children for the possibilities of the future. Thanks, Tom. That's why I'm additionally proposing to fully fund the cost of enrollment growth going forward at our universities and colleges and community colleges. And it's in my recommendation that we fully fund the cost of moving into and operating new facilities on all of those campuses. In that way, we'll be addressing the top priorities identified by the presidents at those institutions. And I'd like to say a few words about our community colleges. Specifically, I want to mention an extraordinary example of collaboration between North Idaho College, the College of Southern Idaho, and the College of Western Idaho. As you know, there is now and has been a pressing need for more workforce training. In fact, the explosive growth on demand here in the Treasure Valley prompted the presidents, the board chairs at NIC and CSI to actually defer their share of $1 million in proposed funding for fiscal year 2013. They said that they would rather see the extra money go to the College of Idaho. Pardon me, my alma mater, no. Sorry, Prez. The College of Western Idaho, which, as you know, is one of the fastest-growing community colleges in the nation's history. So with gratitude for the selflessness and the appreciating their foresight, I'm honoring that request in my budget recommendation. Ladies and gentlemen, Superintendent Luna and I were at St. Mary's a few weeks ago to mark the statewide completion of the Idaho Education Network's Phase 1 efforts. 194 high schools now are connected to the Idaho Education Network, almost a year ahead of schedule and 16% under budget. In St. Mary's, Principal John Cordell and Superintendent Joseph Krenn have been champions of using technology and distance learning to improve and expand student achievement. The culture at St. Mary's High, as is the case with so many of our schools throughout Idaho, has been one aimed at enhancing student achievement through a variety of learning options, despite their remote and rural nature. St. Mary's already is working with North Idaho College, Lewis and Clark State College, and other curriculum providers to demonstrate that the possibilities are limitless with an innovative and an open mind. And there are plenty of those throughout Idaho, eager for the chance to expand their horizons as our Student Comes First efforts will enable and empower them to do. Like our students, Idaho state government must also be prepared for the challenges ahead. Your understanding of the need to work for the best while preparing for the worst gave us the ability to draw down more than $381 million from our various reserve accounts over the past four budget years. Those funds were essential in helping Idaho weather the tough economic and hard times without anything like the dislocation and the draconian measures that other states were forced to take. That money helped us keep our credit rating high and our debt level low. It helped us keep our taxes in check and our eyes on the emerging from this extended downturn with a balanced and structurally sound budget. And we all know that a prerequisite for the growth and renewed prosperity that we need, that's exactly what we need. That's why the budget I'm submitting to you proposed to begin refilling our reserve accounts in preparation for the next unforeseen rainy day. My executive budget calls for setting aside a total of $60 million into the Public Education Stabilization Fund, the Budget Stabilization Fund, and the new Higher Education Stabilization Fund. That will help us maintain the kind of fiscal stability and certainty and responsibility that Idahoans deserve and employers look for in their state government. And that's what Idaho citizens will keep getting under my administration and with your help and continued support. By contrast, that's not what the American people are getting from Washington, D.C. Despite the hard work of our fine congressional delegation, Idaho's brightest spot on the federal level in 2011 was doing what the courts refused to do. Congressman Mike Simpson deserves our praise and our thanks for his successful legislation restoring state management of wolves to Idaho. Now, it helps that Mike was a former speaker of this House. With that experience and his growing influence in Congress, he knows what it takes to get things done that reflect the priorities and the needs of the people back here at home. I'm proud that we are represented in Washington, D.C. by four experienced legislators who served with distinction in this very building. On the other hand, end of the spectrum, as you know, the present administration, the Obama administration, and their so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Health Care Act mandated establishments of a health insurance exchange in each of the states. Now, I'm the first to admit that I have struggled with that federal imposition of this mandate, in part because Idaho was already exploring its own ways to create a market-based insurance exchange long before the federal government adopted this law. Still, last September, I allowed state agencies to apply for a grant to prepare for the federal law while we continue to fight it in court. My decision to allow the application to be submitted simply preserves the opportunity for you and all Idahoans to discuss our options and decide what's best for Idaho and our state and our citizens. In the next few weeks, we will continue to have those discussions, weighing all our options and the potential outcomes associated with each of them. But it is also important to remember those discussions will be taking place in the context of the U.S. Supreme Court's agreeing to consider the lawsuit that Idaho and 25 other states filed to protect the 10th Amendment rights of Idaho and the people to choose. My goal is to collaborate with you today on a principled path forward so that we're prepared for the healthcare environment that we'll have tomorrow. I look forward to hearing from each of you and from the people of Idaho, the people that we serve, about our state's role in ensuring that environment makes healthcare more accessible and more affordable for all of Idahoans. Of course, healthcare is only one of the challenges that lay ahead of us. We have little control over the vagaries of the world and the national economy, but we can ensure that economic opportunity finds a welcoming home here in Idaho. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why I'm proposing that we set aside $45 million for tax relief in fiscal 2013. I have been discussing the form of tax relief for some time now with legislative leadership, business groups, tax experts, and our citizens. There remains a wide diversity of opinion on how best to target tax relief. There are plenty of ideas and just as many ways to crunch the numbers. But there's also a broad consensus on the need to reduce the burden on both our taxpayers and on those employers who are working and looking for opportunities to grow while the economy is creating career and new livelihood opportunities. I look forward to hearing from your proposals and working with you on responsible and forward-looking ways to keep more of our taxpayers' monies in their pockets, where it will do our communities and our people the most good. Beyond Idaho's borders, we are not tasked with addressing the shortcomings of the national administration or the consequences of its inaction or misplaced priorities. But what we can do, and all we should seek to do, is to set an example, the best example possible, of prudent, responsible, responsive, and effective state government. And we can do this if we can nurture and celebrate our private sector success, if we can encourage and collaborate and partnership while protecting individual freedom. We can foster and remove impediments to opportunity. And we can seek to more equitably reward our most valued state employees for continuing in public service. To that end, I'm proposing that we set aside $41 million from the general fund in fiscal year 2013 to reward our most deserving employees, including our public school teachers. But that reward should be structured in such a way that it gives management as much flexibility as possible. It should be in the form of one-time payments and it should be conditioned on tax revenues meeting our projections. Before I go on, I want to take just a moment to recognize and offer my personal thanks to a longtime public servant who's been a mentor and a leader and a dear friend for generations of Idahoans. General Darrell Manning is one of the most committed, conscientious, and common-sense people that I've ever had the privilege of knowing and working with. He served in both chambers of this legislature. He was Idaho's first transportation director, and he's been a valued advisor and confidant of governors and legislators for decades. His recent decision to retire as chairman of the Idaho Transportation Board leaves a vacuum of knowledge and experience and institutional memory that will be difficult to fill. I'm proud to have served by his side and pleased to know that he will continue to answer my calls for his sage advice and counsel. General Manning, Rochelle, with General Manning's support, I will also want to announce today that Region 3 Transportation Board member Jerry Whitehead has agreed to take over as chairman, effective in February. I know you'll join me in welcoming Jerry and Shannon to the chamber. And I ask you to pledge our continued support and assistance to Jerry and the Transportation Board, and to Brian Ness as they work as a team to develop plans and priorities for this essential part of our economic infrastructure. It's been that team concept that has enabled us to refine our state government's processes these past few years. We've made them more transparent and seamless, responsive and stable. Most importantly, we have become better stewards of the taxpayers' money. And that has served to strengthen the foundation on which public confidence is built. That's what being a laboratory of the republic really means. And it's what Idaho is perfectly suited to contribute to our national discussion. Speaking of teams, last summer my staff and I visited with Boise State's football coach, Chris Peterson. We asked the coach how he's been able to keep upgrading the Broncos' success on the field. We ask how he's been able to build a national reputation for excellence with what's considered limited resources by today's college football standards. What we and what I took away from his answers was this: focus. Focus on the challenges at hand. Focus on leveraging your strengths. Focus on improving every day. And focus on what you can control. And finally, focus on helping individual players understand how they can help achieve the team goals while reaching their own academic and athletic potential. That's a pretty good formula for success. It's a high standard, but one which I know everyone here would agree to today and commit to for achieving the best that we can for our people. Keeping faith with the Idaho way of life that we inherited and which we want to pass on demands nothing less. That way of life is characterized by our Idaho values, including our independence and our spiritual strength, our strong belief in self-determination, and our enduring love of liberty. Those values, in turn, are driven by faith in the broader American idea that we as individuals have both the ability and the responsibility to make our future better than our past. The responsibility we share as political leaders is to ensure that every individual Idahoan has the opportunity to realize that goal. To do that, we must be united to overcome common challenges. We must be consistent in nurturing success, and most of all, we must be resolute in protecting our citizens in their efforts. Ladies and gentlemen, let me close today by expressing my sincere gratitude to you and agreeing to be part of this process. Thomas Jefferson wrote an 1801 letter that nicely expresses the importance of integrity to the workings of government. And he wrote, I quote, "Of the various executive's duties, no one excites more anxious concern than that of placing the interests of our fellow citizens in the hands of honest men with the understanding sufficient for their station." And I would add, honest women. My friends, you have that understanding. You have and enjoy that perspective. And you have the love of the state of Idaho. More, far more, than is needed sufficient for your station. And far more than is needed for the sufficient, for us sufficiently challenging the times in which we live. My thanks to you. Godspeed. Let's go to work.
Oh. Thank you.
Huh?
That's tough work.
Go to work.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Brad.
And you think I wasn't supposed to be here today. It's Monday.
Yeah. No, it is.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom. You bet. Thank you.